Well, happy Sabbath, everyone. Welcome to our guests and those listening in. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. And look at all these young people up front. It's good to see you up front. And today's message is for you. But it's applicable to all of us. So the title of today's message is Make the Most of Your Talents. There are many books written on productivity, leadership, and specific to today's message, determining one's strengths, interests, and aptitudes. And these can be very useful tools. Much of the value that's found in the content of these books is really a derivative of the context. The information and the wisdom found in the book in your lap. And so we're going to review what the Bible has to say about these subjects today, specifically regarding productivity, maximizing one's talents, and the level of effort that's appropriate in addressing these issues. A cornerstone of success is understanding one's own strengths, talents, interests, and aptitudes. It's a real blessing when someone is able to figure out early on what they're good at, what they like doing, find a career or an opportunity to utilize those interests, and then do that over a long period of time. That's a real blessing. And we can pray that that blessing is one that you all enjoy as well. And that's the intent of today's message and this afternoon and this evening's content for you. I'd like to do a little myth busting. We'll bust several myths, and you might be familiar with the show Myth Busters, where they consider a myth either busted, probable, possible, or in fact, a fact. So let me ask you, young people, what is the following statement? Anyone can do anything they put their minds to. Is that a myth or is that a fact? That would be a myth. It's not true. Anyone cannot do anything they put their minds to. That is a myth. If you can do it, I can do it. Or the reciprocal. If I can do it, you can do it. Myth or fact? That is a myth. That is a myth. I cannot do everything you can do, nor can you do everything I can do. How about, if you can conceive it, you can achieve it? That sounds pretty good. What do you think? Nope, not true. We did a fun thing at camp this year. We were doing this. Up or down? It would have been fun to have everyone do that. Thumbs up or thumbs down if it's true or false. And all of those would have been false. Possible to some extent within a range, but not entirely true, because we have very different sets of strengths. So athletically, intellectually, musically, artistically, I guarantee you, if any of you have any element of artistic or musical talent, you can do things I cannot do. And some of you know that very well from the song leading and the microphone that goes to the mother's room in the lobby, right? That is not a myth. I apologize about that. So each of us was created with a unique set of strengths. Let's go to the Bible and read that. Romans 12:4. God inspired these words. He inspired these words. They are a manual to us. He knows these things. He created us this way. And he didn't create us all to be yellow pencils, you might say. A commoditized uniform product within very tight statistical differences. We're all very different. You can look at us all and see. We're very different, right? So we all have different looks within a range, though. Of course, there are lots of similarities, too, but we are very different. Romans 12:4 says, "For we have many members in one body, but all members do not have the same function. So we, being many, are one body in Christ and individually members of one another. So we're all part of one body, but we perform different functions. It says in verse 6, having gifts then differing according to the grace that is given us, let us use them. And then he mentions some of these gifts. If prophecy, let us prophesy. Or ministry, let us use it in our ministry or our service. He who teaches, in teaching. He who exhorts, with exhortation. He who gives, with liberality. And he who leads, with diligence. He shows mercy, with cheerfulness. So we have these different gifts. And God expects us to use those gifts for each other's benefit. And to use and exercise and develop those gifts, which is what we're going to talk more about today. Let's read again in 1 Corinthians 12. We're going to go through a lot of scriptures today because we want to be clear that the Bible weighs in on these topics. And you're reading it from the inspired Word of God, not just from something that's written in a secular way or doesn't have this wisdom attached to it. Okay? So you can trust that it's true. 1 Corinthians now 12:4. There are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. Differences of ministries, but the same Lord. There are diversities of activities, but it is the same God who works all in all. So it's important to understand these things. For to one, in verse 8, is given the word of wisdom through the Spirit. To another, the word of knowledge through the same Spirit. To another, faith. To another, gifts of healings. To another, the working of miracles. And to another, prophecy. To another, tongues. And so, interpretation of tongues. But, verse 11, the same Spirit works all of these things, distributing to each one individually as He, God, wills. So God didn't create us all the same. How many of you have ever taken some sort of personality profile, some sort of strengths finder, some sort of indication of where who you are uniquely as a person? Show of hands. So what you all found out is that you are a northeast, west, or south, a blue, a yellow, a red, a white, an amiable driver, expressive, or analytical. It doesn't matter what you found out you were. You also found out that you're in the minority. Because if you divide it into quadrants and you're in one quadrant, well, 75% of the population is something different than you. Right? And if we keep going, there are some that are even more granular. Myers-Briggs, ISTJ, or ENFP. And then there are even subcategories of that. So any one of those categories represents 3 to 6% of the population, indicating that the majority of the population thinks, responds, processes information differently than you do, which makes you unique, right? So it's good to understand what your strengths and interests are and how you process information, because that becomes very useful knowledge in determining how you are going to benefit others. And specific to your job preparation, there are certain jobs that require certain characteristics. Or, let's say, stack the odds in your favor with regard to success. Right? So, if you don't have an analytical bone in your body, being an analyst is not going to work well for you. You'll look at it and say, what is all this garbage? I don't want to look at this all day. It's not your thing. You might be more inclined to want to deal with people, in which case there are more customer-facing type jobs that might be suited to you. So those things are really important to understand. And if you can understand them, then you can help understand what careers are best suited and how to utilize them. And many of you have just graduated. We had a whole recent round of graduations. Many of you are in high school, but getting towards the point in high school where you start thinking about what's next. We also have some grad students, some college students, and some graduate students in our midst. And from time to time, we all think about this as we assess where we are in our careers and whether we want to do something different, whether there's something best suited to us, whether we should take a promotion, a raise, a transfer, list goes on, and these thoughts are useful. These words are useful to help us make that decision. Does this really suit my interests, strengths, and aptitudes is a great question when presented with a choice with regard to our career or whether to work or not work. And if we can learn these things, then vicariously especially, then we can be happy and maximize our opportunities. It takes a village. It takes a lot of input and help for us to understand these things. We can do these young people a service by helping them come to understand what their strengths are. Young people, you have a wonderful blessing to know that you have a family here beyond just your close family that cares for you. And there's a lot of people here that care for you and really want to see you succeed. And they have a broad perspective because of the variety of different experiences that they've had. And that perspective may help you out. So when you have opportunity to ask people about their careers, their interests, how they utilize them, if they're successful, ask them what the first 6 years of that particular endeavor were like. It's probably a very different story than what you see now, because it's been fun to ask that question. Tell me about the headwaters of this decision. Tell me about when you first started. It looks like you're doing great now. What was that like in the beginning? Oh boy, I'll tell you about that. Ramen noodles and rice and beans are often part of that story, right? Working many, many hours getting it going. Failures and multiple failures perhaps. And it's great to hear those stories because especially if you're going through something like that, you think, oh, this is just normal. It's part of it. So that's a really great opportunity that you have. And then we, of course, can willingly share those things, share our experiences. James 5 speaks to this principle. We can turn to a couple of these scriptures. James is writing a letter here to his congregation, and he's encouraging them to pay attention to each other and care about each other's needs. I think the principle applies directly here. First, James 5:13. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing psalms. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of the faith will save the sick. If any one of you is thinking about these things, about your job, well then you could go to somebody perhaps who's in that career and talk to them. Can you tell me what the education looks like? Can you tell me what I need to be successful in that career? At one point, Logan and I were talking to our dermatologist, and he was considering different things, and he says, what does it take to be a dermatologist? And the guy said, well, I'd be happy to help you with that. And he says, just quickly, you could come and shadow me anytime you want, but I'll also tell you what the preparation looks like. You go to school, undergraduate, then you go to med school, and then you go to a residency, and then you go through a fellowship, and you have to be in the top 1% of your class all the way through. It's highly competitive. And then you start to work, but by then you'll have amassed, you know, this much, $500,000 worth of school and debt, and you get started when you're about 35. So if that's of interest to you, you know, let's continue the discussion. It kind of died right there. You started looking at other options, but that's really good to know, right? It'd be far worse to be 8 years into that and decide, what am I doing? This isn't a good fit. Let's turn over to Galatians 6. So again, it is great to talk to people that are in the career, and we have a wide range represented here in just this group of people. And our young people, you young people, are a really precious resource. And it's really important to all of us that you do get grounded and you do grow roots and you do produce fruit in the form of your jobs and that you're happy and successful as you can possibly be, given all the advantages that we can try to help you out with. Galatians 6:2 speaks to this as well. bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. So it also says in verse 5, each one will bear his own load. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. That we have a responsibility to look out for others, and we have a responsibility to shoulder our own burden as well. Verse 7. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. This is an important principle. For if you sow to the flesh, you'll have the flesh reap corruption. And if you sow to the Spirit, you'll have of the Spirit reap everlasting life. What you might think of is that your actions are like planting seeds. And when you do productive, when you have productive actions, when you do things that lead towards a positive outcome, when those seeds grow, they will bear good fruit. And if, on the other side, you make wrong choices or bad choices, and you plant bad, negative seeds, you won't be pleased with what grows as a result of those seeds. Verse 9, let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not lose heart. To be a dermatologist takes a lot of effort, but in the end, it's a pretty good setup. You know, you work office hours, he makes good money, he benefits people, he helps them out, they get better as a result of his services, and it's a very rewarding career, but it takes a lot of effort to get there. And so it will take effort in many cases to follow these principles. Next point. God has given us our talents. God gives us talents. Let's turn over to Matthew 25 and read about the principle of talents. Now, in this parable, talents are referred to as a unit of money. But we use the term as a unit of whatever resource, a skill, an ability, an aptitude, an interest, etc. So by using those terms synonymously, they still work very well. So the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country. He calls his servants and delivered his goods to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1. We know the story. The one who made 5, who was given 5, made 5 more talents, developed those talents. The one who had 2 did 2 more. The one who got 1, what did that servant do? Nothing. He did nothing with it. And how was that rewarded? It was not. It was taken away from him, given to one who would do something with it, and that one was cast out, worthless. It's no good. So, talents and the talents that we've been given must be developed. And there's only one way to do that. It's one, identify them, and 2, work hard to develop them. There's a book by Jeffrey Colvin entitled Talent is Overrated. And the book debunks the theory that some are just born with natural and amazing talents. And that might be a convenient thought for those of us who are less talented to say, well, I guess I just wasn't born with the talents. The book goes through and it shows how those who seem like they're extremely talented or who have great achievements at a very young age actually worked hard to develop and practice those skills, and environment had a big part of it. Mozart, for example, was composing works in his early 20s that others never did until they were well into their 30s. Mozart's dad was a composer. So Mozart, as a young man, was helping compose for his dad when he was 6, 7, 8 years old. So he had very specific training at a very young age, which gave him, at 21, 15 years of experience. And if someone else didn't start until they were 20, then at 35, they would just have been accumulating that same level of experience. So in that case, it makes sense. The point is that it's not because of exceptional talents of those individuals that caused them to do those. It was because of exceptional training or environment or hard work and effort and the cumulative effect of that work and effort. Now, this seems to fly in the face of the myth we talked about earlier that anyone can do anything. Now, the fact is that if it's within your talents and abilities and you work hard at it, then you can achieve. And that's what the book talks about, that it takes time and practice to develop a talent, and hard work is implied. It's necessary. But God does give us talents and abilities. The term, or the combination of God plus given, God-given, is used 256 times in the New King James Version. So God does definitely give us and supply us with tools, with resources, with abilities. He gives us wisdom, knowledge, inheritance, etc. Some things we're given that have nothing to do with us. All of us in this room are here in the most blessed nation in the world. And it's not our fault. We didn't do anything to deserve it. We just happened to be here. And that's one of those elements of God gave us an inheritance. We drove here on roads we didn't pave. We drink water from a well we didn't dig. We just enjoy blessings. This room is air conditioned. And how nice is that? We didn't invent air conditioning, but we benefit from it. We didn't make it affordable. We could live in other parts of the country. 4 billion people on this earth live on less than $2 a day. So our cell phone bills are more than what most people live on, most people in this world. That has nothing to do with us. We are given a certain set of circumstances, and we're tasked with doing the best that we can with those. We still do have responsibilities, and we want to make the most of those talents, but some things were given us, and we don't have anything to do with that. But yet, we can't also blame the fact that we weren't given certain things. We just have to make the most with what we do have. And I think that example indicates that we do have tremendous blessings. And we are, of all people, very blessed. So let's poke some holes in some arguments against working hard. The end is coming. It doesn't matter. Forget about it. Why? Who cares if the end is coming anyway? And it's closer now than it once was. Right? We know that every day it's closer to the time when Jesus Christ returns and establishes a government. But let's think about that argument. What happens at the end? It's not really the end, it's a new beginning, right? Those of you who just graduated went through commencement, not necessarily completion. You did complete something, but now you commence on new endeavors and new activities. And that's really what the time of Christ's return is going to be like. We now start a new set of activities with new government and new leadership. And if we're preparing for that, then when is our responsibility to stop developing in? Our last breath. Because we continue to grow and develop until that end. Because we're preparing for eternity. So there isn't anyone here that doesn't have the responsibility and opportunity to continue to grow and develop. We're all here to do that. That's why we're here. So we should be doing everything we can. Matthew 24:36, we might still be there, but it says, the day and the hour no one knows, but watch, because you don't know. And what we want to hear when Christ returns is, blessed servant, because when his master comes, we are found so doing. And it will be said, well done, good and faithful. So we keep working. Now, accumulation of wealth could be seen as greed, and we're not necessarily talking about accumulation of wealth. Proverbs 23:4 says, don't overwork to be rich. So we're keeping that principle in mind here. Don't overwork. Don't kill yourself for material things, is what it's saying. What it is not saying is don't work hard to provide for yourself and your family. So let's make sure that we don't take things out of context or misapply them. It says in Ecclesiastes 5:11. We'll turn there real quick. That wisdom is defense. It's an asset. Wisdom is. As money is a defense as well. Now it says in verse 10, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This is vanity. So if your whole goal is accumulation of wealth, well, as soon as you acquire something, you'll want the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. That's been defined as the hedonic treadmill, where you're on this treadmill and you're running and running and running, and you're not really going anywhere because you're not really making progress. Your happiness does not increase. But when goods increase, they increase who eat them. So the point is that if we have some financial resources stored up, we're better off than if we don't. If we develop wisdom and we develop this knowledge, then we're better off than if we don't. So 2 Corinthians 9 also speaks to this notion of being productive. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. God loves it when we give. How do we have something to give? We give because we're productive and we look for opportunities to serve others. So we save things, we don't consume everything that we are able to accumulate, and we have it to give to others, and God says that's good. And then we think, well, if I give it away, I don't have it anymore. And it says here in verse 8, but God's able to make all grace abound towards you, that you always, having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. It's God who created everything, ultimately. God created everything, and if he could take a whole nation and take them out in the middle of the desert and provide for them for 40 years and then into the land that they inherited, he can take good care of us as well, right? So we can give, we can be generous, and that's a great motivation to do well, is to work hard and have something to share for others. So God loves this principle. And it says in 2 Corinthians 9, 7, and 10 here that he also rewards those, rewards the effort, multiplies our efforts. So when we put effort forth, it's like the wind's at our back, so to speak. It's a multiplication of efforts, but he doesn't reward lack of effort. So work is valuable. Proverbs 14:23, in all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. There are people that will just talk and talk and talk about work, but never really get anything done. That's worthless. Proverbs talks a lot about the effort that it takes to develop character and skills and wisdom and knowledge and understanding. It takes a lot of effort, and it says that that's very valuable, and seek it as much as you would seek anything else. Work hard to develop it. Work is a part of our life. Why? Why is it that we have to work so hard? Why is it? Let's turn over to Genesis. Genesis 3 and verse 14. This is just after Adam and Eve chose to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The Lord God said to the serpent, because you've done this, you're more cursed than all cattle and more than every beast of the field, and on your belly you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, between her seed and your seed, he shall bruise your head and you shall bruise his heel. So we know that serpents do go on the ground, and most people hate snakes and kill them when they can. Snakes bite people. There's that. To the woman he said, I'll greatly multiply your sorrow and conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. And we know that women bring forth children in pain. It's very high on the scale of pain. Almost as high as shoulder surgery. So you women almost know what those who have gone through shoulder surgery have gone through. That's painful too. I don't know where they are on the scale, but it's painful. Verse 17, the second part. To the man he says, because you listened to your wife, you've eaten from this tree, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it. All the days of your life, both thorns and thistles it will bring forth for you. And in the sweat of your face you shall eat bread until you die. For out of it you were taken, dust you are, and to dust you will return. That's the prophecy that says that it's going to be hard for us. We're going to have to work. And it's a result of Adam and Eve's sin, and all of us have sinned as well. So we get what we deserve there. And while we're on this earth, We have to work hard. Implicitly in the commandment to keep the Sabbath, it says in Exodus 29, 6 days shall you do your work. And then the seventh day, the Sabbath day, is a rest from what? Work. And now we have another day, Sunday, that is often used for what? It's a term we use, starts with an R. Recreation. Let's subdivide that term. Recreate. What are we recreating? What are we resting from? What are we rejuvenating to be able to do? Go back to work. So we recreate so we can go back to work. So that's what recreation is about. Exodus 34:21 reiterates, 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh you shall rest. And it says that we should rest in plowing time and in harvest. And that kind of alludes to the cyclical nature of work sometimes, that there are times when you really are working hard. Accountants know this to be true, right? In tax season, working really hard. In retail, there's seasonality associated with retail. So in hospitality, there's seasonality. So there are times when you work incredibly hard, and then there are times when it backs off. And so that's something to think about as well if you're in a career that's like that. School's starting. So if you're in education now, it might be a time that you're working exceptionally hard with your lesson planning and getting to know new students and that. So there's seasonality associated with that. Times when we work harder and times when we don't. It's saying here, rest regardless of whether you're in a heavy season or not. So we should work hard. Ecclesiastes 9 speaks to this. You can turn to Ecclesiastes 9. Ecclesiastes 9 is speaking to enjoying the fruits of your labor. Because you've worked hard, it says in verse 7, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart. Bread you've worked hard for, wine you've worked hard for as well. God's accepted your works. Let your garments be white and let your head lack no oil. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your life which she's given you under the sun. All your days of this striving, this vanity, which is striving, and ultimately we all die. So he calls it vanity here. For that's your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going. So while we're here, let's work hard, is what Solomon is saying in Ecclesiastes. Work hard. I'm going to spin through many of Solomon's writings here. Repetition is the best form of emphasis, and the Bible repeats this concept many times, implying that it's important because it has been repeated and emphasized so much. Proverbs 10:4, the hand of the diligent makes one rich. Proverbs 12:24, the hand of the diligent will rule, but the slothful will be put to forced labor. What does that mean? What does it mean that the hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy will be forced to work? Let's make it personal now. All of us, in any endeavor, when we work hard, when we're exceptionally diligent to do a good job, what happens? Does that start to get noticed? It starts to get noticed. To whom do leadership positions fall? To those that work hard, to those that are diligent, to those who do a good job. So when we think about our career progression, we can think about these principles early on and start developing them now, because it will help us out. So it's saying that the hand of the diligent, the one who works hard and is responsible and is on time and does the best job they can and can also encourage and motivate others to do so, ends up ruling in leadership positions. But the lazy will be forced to work. That's what those that are in those leadership positions have to do, to make sure that everybody does their job and their fair share, and it's work just to get that done. So these are important principles, very helpful as we think about this, and character traits that we want to be developing. Proverbs 12:27 says, the lazy doesn't even roast what he took in hunting. So when opportunities fall in front of the the person that's lazy, they don't even do anything with them. But it reiterates again, diligence is man's precious possession. So that's something to think about, and a nugget, if you will, from today's message, from the Bible. Diligence is man's precious possession. So if we employ that one character trait alone, that is precious, and we will see fruits as a result. Proverbs 21:5, the plans of the diligent lead to plenty. Why is that true? Because they make plans and then they're diligent to prepare for them, diligent to execute. They pay attention to the details. We've all forgotten different things in our life. We've forgotten when a paper was due. We forgot to study for a test. We forgot these things. We weren't diligent paying attention to the details. And those things, as you go through those, you learn lessons, right? And hopefully the lesson is to be prepared, to be more diligent. We've all been ill-prepared for things at work. And sometimes it's negligence, sometimes it just happens, things happen. But we can stack statistics in our favor if we develop that character trait and we do our best to be prepared. Proverbs 22, verse 29. Do you see a man who excels in his work? Gender nonspecific here. Do you see a person who excels in their work? They will stand before kings. Back to getting noticed by the leadership. And the Bible uses kings and priests often. And they are examples of civil and religious leadership roles. So kings being civil leadership. Before the boss, you might say. Proverbs 27:23, be diligent to know the state of your flocks. So it's important to know the condition of your things. Pay careful attention to your finances. Might be a way to translate that. Pay careful attention to the opportunities that are presented you and take those opportunities. Pay careful attention to your flocks. Flocks were the way that at the time that people provided for their family, right? Wool for material for clothes, food, milk, etc. It's important to know the state of those flocks. So we should work hard. We should be diligent. We should develop that trait. Next point, laziness will not be rewarded. It's easier to be lazy than it is to work hard. It's the path of least resistance, you might say. So you might think that things will come to you, that you'll be blessed. Everything else has worked out in the past, but the time comes when your own actions and your efforts are going to reward you or not. We read in Galatians 6:7, don't be deceived. Don't kid yourself. These principles are real. God is not mocked. What you sow, you will reap. So the effort that you put into it is what you'll get out of it. And if you don't put effort in, then you know what to expect. Proverbs 20:13 says, do not love sleep, lest you come to poverty. It's important to get up and get busy. Proverbs 10:5, he who sleeps in harvest is a son that causes shame. Proverbs 13:4, the soul of the lazy man desires things, but he has nothing. Proverbs 14:23, idle chatter leads only to poverty. So just talking about things doesn't get it done. You have to get it done to get it done. Excuses don't work. Proverbs 24, the lazy doesn't plow. Why? Oh, it's not a good time right now. It's winter. Can't go do that. And therefore, he will beg during the harvest and has nothing. 22:13 says, there's a lion outside. I'll be slain in the streets. So some unfounded fear keeps some people from achieving anything. There's a lion outside. Something bad could happen. It's unsafe to drive to work. Whatever it is, you make up your own excuse for why you can't get something done. Saying here, the result of that is nothing. Ecclesiastes 11:4, he who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Again, it's easy to make excuses. In this case, the weather isn't optimal. But Christ alluded to a principle in his teachings. It says, if a tree doesn't bear fruit, what good is it? What happens to it? It gets cut down. It's just using up space, using up resources. If a person doesn't work, they don't eat. Proverbs 14:23 says this progression is gradual. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and then your poverty sneaks up with you. sneaks up on you. It says in Proverbs 23:20, be careful not to hang out with those who waste resources. Do not mix with those prone to wine or gluttonous eaters of meat, for the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. So if you do things that are either wasteful in resources or just completely unproductive, it does nothing for you. Time is a resource. Time is a resource. So like money, what can you do with money and time? Can you spend it? Can you waste it? Time and money you can both spend and waste. You can also invest it. You can also invest your time and perhaps your money. Okay, so we've laid the foundation. What should young people do? What do you do with this now? It's your job to figure out how your strengths, interests, and aptitudes become useful. It's your job to become productive members of society. Now, we've talked about the fact that we all care for you and we all want to help you. But this is a responsibility to really take on your own. Think about it. What do I like doing? Am I good at math? Am I good at English? Am I good at this? Am I good at that? What am I not good at? What am I good at? What do I like? What don't I like? That's the reason that you take all of these general education classes. So you get the diversity of experiences there so you can determine where your strengths lie. Some classes you'll probably find that you like to work on it, and therefore you tend to get better grades in those classes, and other classes you may really have to struggle to get decent grades because you just don't like it. But it's important to understand those things, and important to understand, and you can look at, and there's plenty of data out there to help you know and learn what interests and aptitudes lead to certain types of careers. Speak to people in the field of interest. So if you're interested in something, like we talked about earlier with the dermatologist, speak to somebody that's in that field and ask them about it. Ask if you can learn more about what they do, if they can share with you what they do and what type of education it took to get there. Look for mentors. Proverbs 15:22 says, without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. So by talking to many people who know you and know something about your capabilities, then they can help direct you in many ways and perhaps give you exposure to things that would be helpful. Have or make a plan. Have a plan, make a plan. Now you may change that plan, but it's good to start thinking where you want your life to end up and what you want it to look like. And so start making a plan that leads you in that direction. We have our overall goal established for us. Matthew 6:33 says, seek first the kingdom. And that really helps as a goal because we can look way out there and say, our goal is to make it to the kingdom. And it straightens our path, right? Because if we start heading in a direction that doesn't lead to that, we can say, this is not congruent with my goals or my values. So if you establish what your goals and values are, what you want to do, what you want your future life to be like, what you want it to be like when you're old, you can start to say, hey, when I'm that guy's age, I want to be doing this. I want to have a successful marriage. I want to have kids. I want to have them go to a good school. I want to be able to drive them to that school. Those are all worthy goals. I want to be able to provide for them. I want to be able to go to a good feast, go to a feast site, and be able to have a place to stay while we're there and eat. I want all of these things, and so I'm willing to work hard to prepare myself to be able to do that, with God's help, of course. There's a book called What Color Is Your Parachute? It was around when I was a teenager, but it's been recently reworked. It's by Richard Bowles. It was updated in 2015. This book has sold 10 million copies. It's been translated into 20 different languages. It's considered the number one book for preparation for a job and going through that whole interview process. There's one that's entitled, What Color Is Your Parachute for Teens? So that would be a worthy resource to consider looking into. I remember that book when I was a teenager, and I remember the subtitle of the book said, if you don't know where you're going, you'll probably end up somewhere else. And it just helped me think a little bit about having a plan. So I looked this book up, and one of the review comments was interesting. It said, it gave it 5 stars, and it says, the book review, recommended by my dad. He was on point this time. And it says then that he helped me redevelop my resume, or the book did, better understand my skills and reprioritize what and how I am looking for in a job. So that young man complimented his dad in that case for pointing him to that book. Proverbs 16:9 says, plan your way and the Lord will direct your steps. So we have to put forth effort to think about where we want to go. And then God blesses us along that way. And that's another great thing to ask other people about and hear their stories about how that's been true. Because I've heard some great stories from people in this room. And so that's a great question to ask. How did God direct that? And I heard a great story yesterday, not from someone in this room, but a really great story about how this young man was diligent and got an engineering degree and graduated college and had no idea what to do with that degree. But he knew it was his job to find a job, and he kept looking and looking at options, and he had someone who recommended that he work for the patent office, that they would hire engineers out of the patent office. So he went to Washington, D.C., and he interviewed at the patent office, and he got the job. And it turns out that there's a lot of hard work there, but it paid well, and he started doing well. And then ultimately, he didn't want to live in Washington, D.C. He and his wife both ended up working at the patent office. She was also an engineer. And they did well there, and then they just decided to move to Arizona. So they came out here to Arizona, and they started a company to do patent research. And now, while they said that they worked 80, 90-hour weeks for the first 6 years, back to the whole first six-year story, now 12 years later, they have 125 employees and a really nice business. But it took a lot of effort and a lot of diligence, and they just got into something and got good at it and then continued to develop those skills, talents, and abilities. And now they do a lot of good for a lot of people. So just an example of applying these principles and working hard to look for and find opportunities. Do your research. It's a job to get a job. It's not always an easy job, right? To get a job. It takes a lot of effort to find something and then compare it using this assessment. Does this fit me? Am I interested in this? Do my skills, talents, and abilities work for this? Does my education prepare me for this? Does this further me towards my goals or not? That's a job. It takes a lot of effort and research to get there. So, what kind of careers may fit? Lots of options. You'll be exposed to some tonight. There are trades. We're lacking in trades now. This most recent recession wiped out a lot of tradesmen because those that were well-established tradesmen have now started to retire. And because of that time period when there wasn't a lot of construction and a lot of those trades going on, manufacturing has largely left the country, there aren't the same tradesmen there anymore. So if it starts back up, then who's going to fulfill those jobs? There's a big lack there. Mechanics, engineers, and then there are lots of different, say, IT-related. So IT-related, you could just look at this one field where there's a steadily increasing demand for it and think about where you might fit within that spectrum. Technicians. Technicians are needed to understand and repair problems. Engineers. Project managers. Almost everything associated with IT involves a project to implement it. So to just simply gather the requirements, understand what the requirements are, help coordinate putting a solution together, helping to implement that solution, and then monitoring and managing it later, those are all useful skills and talents that people will pay for, and it's important to prepare yourself for that. Software developers, technical writers. We have technical writer. Larry Beckett is a technical writer. And he's specifically on an assignment right now addressing cybersecurity for a government agency. Great guy to talk to if that's an area of interest for you. We talked about accounting. Accounting is, there's a steady demand for accounting. Accountants, in many ways, are the policemen of the financial world. So publicly traded entities are required to have their books audited so that those financial statements accurately represent the financial position of the company. Without that, then trust could be eroded in the financial system, investment would stop, and the economy would come to a halt. So there's a demand for accountants. Engineering, thought leadership. Engineers are thought leaders. They think about what needs to be designed, and they think about how to employ the different characteristics of physics and mathematics in mechanical, electrical, civil ways. We talked about patent research, another application for that analytical mindset. Medical, steadily growing demand for medical. Nurses, doctors, physical therapists, the list goes on in medical. Places and ways that you could contribute in that way. Construction, there's a whole wide range there as well, both in the field and estimators, engineers, project managers, again, lots of options. The services industry. Services industry, Arizona has a lot of hospitality and a lot of services associated with it. So if you are service-oriented, then there are lots of opportunities to utilize those strengths and abilities to help benefit others and help them to have a good experience and to appreciate perhaps their vacation or a meal or their hotel experience. Small business. We have lots of small business owners in all across the spectrum. So entrepreneurs, you could ask them what it was like to get started and where that led and how long it took. So tonight you'll have exposure to many of these things. And hopefully what we've done today is help stimulate some of the demand for that content. God, through His Word, gives us much direction in this area. And it's extremely important that we all take this responsibility seriously to develop our own talents and abilities and to help these young people develop their strengths and characteristics. Let's remember that we're preparing for eternity and that we pay tithes and offerings and we share with others from the fruit of our efforts. Diligence is man's precious possession. So let's develop and utilize this character trait as God would have us in every area of our lives.